As the second phase of the high-level revitalization forum kicks off in Addis Ababa today, we ask what is in it for the UK and how would the British government like to see things play out at this critical forum. Well, joining us in the studio to answer these and more is the Church D Affairs of the British Embassy in South Sudan, Mike Riley. Good morning and good to have you on the Miraya Breakfast Show.
Good morning. I'm delighted to be here.
Yes. Now, the UK, as a major partner in South Sudan peace process, is present at the high-level revitalization forum in Addis Ababa. Tell us, yesterday there was a meeting, possibly. Tell us, what were the key outcomes of that particular meeting?
I think we've got the meeting starts, I think, officially today. So we will see what happens in Addis Ababa. But the UK government's been a strong supporter of this process, as you know, as Chris Trott, our special representative, has made clear, and working with the Troika partners, we've been engaging extensively across the region, but also in South Sudan, to ensure that everyone, to ensure that we can help as much as possible to make this process successful. You know, we hope that all sides to the conflict will recommit to the cessation of hostilities agreement signed on the 21st of December last year, and show compromise for the sake of the people of South Sudan, who are suffering intolerable injustices at the moment. And this is the focus for us, is to get back to why we're doing this and what it is that we're trying to support, and why it's so important for the people of South Sudan that it's delivered. So it's important that the region maintains its focus and its unity and its pressure on the government of South Sudan and all the parties to the conflict to bring the violence to an end, to get back to an inclusive political dialogue, a process which can lead to stability and eventually prosperity for South Sudan and its people. Too many generations of South Sudanese have seen their lives and their hopes and their ambitions damaged by conflict, and we need to bring that to an end.
Right. And what key elements need to be addressed to realize actual revitalization?
Well, the key points are, of course, the fundamental points are around implementation of the original peace agreement signed in 2015, but also recommitting and implementation of the cessation of hostilities agreement, which covers not just cessation of hostilities, but also humanitarian access. And these are important elements that we need to remind ourselves of. So this is an opportunity, particularly with the strengthening of CTSAM, the operation, the body that is responsible for monitoring and verification of the ceasefire in South Sudan, is for that organization to get out in the field and to make sure that the sides are complying with the commitments made in Addis Ababa last December. So that's what I think we need to look forward to, is a recommitment today from all parties that they are serious, that they want to end this conflict, and the region to continue to support that process. And if necessary, if there are those who fail to commit or decide to disrupt this process, to look at taking action against those individuals, as we've seen over the last few days from the European Union and from the United States, that those who disrupt this process, those who seek to spoil what the future of so many people in this country, they will be held accountable. Mm-hmm. And the international community, and we hope the region, will also take note and take action.
Yes, just briefly on that you pointed out about some sanctions on some individual who are disrupting the peace process. Now, what impact will this European Union sanction have when it comes to basically the next round of talks?
So the purpose of the sanctions that the European Union has just announced on three individuals, members of the government or former members of the political system in South Sudan, as to send a very clear signal to the government of South Sudan and to the people and others outside of this process, outside of the government, but also part of the peace agreement, that their behavior is being monitored. We are watching, and we will hold them to account, and we will, if necessary, take action to try to change not just their behavior, but the behavior of others. So others in the system. Mm-hmm. So although the three named individuals came out on Saturday This isn't about punishment of those individuals directly. It's actually about sending a very clear signal mm-hmm. about changing behaviour across South Sudan, and that if behaviour does not change, further action will also be taken. And we hope the region will back this, because at the end of the day, the region has mm-hmm. the biggest stake in South Sudan, and South Sudan in the region. So I think it's a mutual thing, and mm-hmm. I think the region should stand up and take action if they see individuals disrupting, and they should send a very clear signal that this is unacceptable and that the time has come to take some action.
Yes. Now, going back to the first session of the High-Level Revitalization Forum, several of the schedules proposed in that session, such as the release of prisoners of war and, you know, child recruits, some of them have overrun their timelines. What should be done to prevent the process from, you know, stagnating, as the case with the 2015 peace agreement?
I agree that there have been, obviously from the 2015 agreement, that hasn't been implemented. That's quite clear. We've seen numerous violations of the existing ceasefire mm-hmm. in that agreement. We've now had the cessation of hostilities agreement, and we've seen numerous instances of violations of that agreement. So all I can say is that we want, those that are challenging both agreements and not by non-implementation, that the region again commits, and the region again puts pressure on the parties to the agreement, the two agreements, to recommit and to implement them. Mm-hmm. Now, that sounds very simple when I say that. In practice, it is, we're dealing with a non-international armed conflict in South Sudan. This is between warring factions within this country, but also the government of South Sudan is a major part of that. And it's easy for me to say that. It's all about implementation. Mm-hmm. As we've said all along, mm-hmm. The government needs to take its responsibility and implement the agreement. It mm-hmm. needs to show restraint. It needs to bring its forces back. It needs to avoid conflict situations. And the monitoring mechanism of CTSAM needs to identify where those flashpoints are and seek to keep forces apart from one another. And that is what we're engaged in at the moment, and that's what CTSAM is doing, some very important work over the next few weeks to try and help prevent and mitigate future sources of conflict in this country.
Right. And now, Mike, across the world, there are more competing crises. What is that makes the situation of South Sudan especially critical right now?
I think if you just look at the raw figures, I think South Sudan is now the largest, if not certainly the largest in this region, refugee population in the region. So that sends a very clear signal to the international community that there is a serious and urgent problem in South Sudan. When you have 2 million people being forced to leave their homes and seeking refuge in a neighbouring country, the disruption that causes, not just to the families involved and the individual crisis that creates for those that are affected, but also for the country as a whole. The economy in South Sudan is being disrupted by people moving, being displaced. Mm-hmm. Investment is not coming into South Sudan because people have no trust, they have no faith, they want a predictable business environment, and that can't happen with people moving and being displaced, whether internally or into the region. So that sends a very clear signal to the world that South mm-hmm. Sudan needs attention, and that's why we are putting so much focus on it with our partners in the EU, with the US and Canada and others, to through the Troika as well, of course, to put pressure on the government to bring this conflict to an end so that we can start doing and helping South Sudan rebuild. This is a young country. It's had a very traumatic and very difficult birth. We want it now to move forward. We can't do that unless everyone commits and everyone accepts a degree of responsibility and accepts there's going to be some compromises if we're going to reach a peaceful outcome, and then let the political process that follows deliver what I hope is a sustainable mm-hmm. and prosperous South Sudan.
Yes. Yesterday at Juba Stadium, during the National Unity Day celebration, or the final match, addressing a very large crowd, the first vice president, General Taban Dengai, did mention that actually in South Sudan, there's no fighting anymore. There's peace in the country. The only you know, violent and war taking place, is the media spreading it and is saying things, you know, okay. Now, as an observer, someone who is here, is, do you share the same kind? I mean, what would you like to comment on that?
Well, I don't really share that view. I think there remains a lot of conflict in this country. There may have been some lessening of the conflict over the last few weeks as a result of the fact that we are now engaging very closely with the government and through CTSAM to get people out into the field. But I think it's, I think we'd have to say you'd need a longer run time to establish that there is an ending to the conflict. And there's also a lot of course, intercommunal conflict in this country, which we should never forget is causing a lot of misery and suffering across the country. But in terms of the peace process, what I think we need to see is a sustained restraint by the government of its forces, and of course the opposition forces need to also take their responsibility to keep away from the areas that are potentially hot spots or flashpoints, so that we can get this political process working. So the next 2 weeks are critical for South Sudan's future, and I think that's what we should be focusing on. And I don't think we should be drawing parallels between different times in South Sudan's history. Over the last few years, we've seen conflicts starting to increase as the dry season, as we're in the dry season, conflicts increasing. That's happened in the previous year. And I remember being in South Sudan in late 2016 to be told there would be no military offensive, and we did see military offensives in South Sudan. So I think I would urge everyone just to get back to focusing on what we are looking for, which is an end to the violence and a political process that follows.
Now, as these 2 weeks in Addis Ababa negotiations going on, what role or what more can the regional and the international community do to avert the further crisis in the country?
I mean, I go back to what I was saying earlier about the region obviously putting pressure on the government and the parties to the conflict to stay the course, to invest and to commit to a process which will deliver a sustainable outcome for South Sudan. And if there are those within the political system that do not want to comply with what they've committed themselves to do, then I think the region and the international community, I know the UK will back further punitive measures against those that are disrupting the peace process. The UK has already done that either through the UN or through the EU. So I think the region could look at that, and we will also look at how we can support that through the UN Security Council.
Right. As we move on, we've seen and heard the US and the EU imposing sanctions. Is the UK also planning to do the same on imposing sanctions?
So the UK, as a member of the European Union, we already have an arms embargo implemented on South Sudan through the European Union. We have also taken EU measures in line with UN sanctions, and we've also adopted EU measures as of Saturday on three individuals, which essentially lead to a travel ban and an asset freeze for those individuals with any links to the European Union. So through the UK's membership of the European Union, we are obviously taking action, and as a member of the UN Security Council, we've also taken action at the Security Council level. So I think we've made some clear signals to the government, and we will consider further measures, bilateral or otherwise, with our European partners. And if the region seeks to take further action, of course, we would support them.
Yes, just to be clear, you said after the three individuals who are sanctioned, the European Union has also issued an embargo.
The European issued an arms embargo on South Sudan, I believe, about 4 or 5 years ago. I can't remember the exact day. But the European Union already has an arms embargo. The US has just issued an arms embargo. The US and Canada issued measures against those three individuals that we, as the European Union, issued on Saturday. So there's an alignment between what we're doing from the European Union side, as with the US and Canada, which I think is a welcome thing. Mm-hmm. I think, though, the region now needs to look at what measures they can take to encourage the government and put pressure on those individuals to change their behaviour so that we can move forward in the peace process.
Right. Just before you go, I mean, the second phase is obviously kicking off. So what can average people in the UK and those around the world help support South Sudan, the people of South Sudan, to support the peace process in this phase?
I think very, very clear messages through media, through this media, through other forms of media, through writing to the government, to writing to the IGAD Council of Ministers, to go on to radio shows when they can and raise the issue and say, what is the world doing to support South Sudan, the people of South Sudan? Just to keep the interest and keep the focus and momentum on this process, so mm-hmm. that those individuals sitting in Addis Ababa, looking at the future of South Sudan, realize the weight of responsibility on their shoulders to deliver peace. And, I can't emphasize enough, it's so important that if we're going to address this humanitarian crisis that we've seen in South Sudan, with 7 million people in need of food, 4 million people displaced or either internally or externally as refugees, an economy that's suffered such a lot and continues to suffer because of the displacement of the key productivity in this country, which is the wonderful South Sudanese people. Mm. All of that can't happen unless there is peace and the guns are put down and people start talking to each other and trying to resolve each other through political systems, not through military violence.
Mike, thank you so much for coming to Mirai Breakfast Show. Really do appreciate your final remarks.
I mean, just to say, I mean, I've been here just over a year or so, and I've met so many warm and kind people in South Sudan, and I think just a message to the government and to those who are listening, who have an influence over this process, whether it's the churches, whether it's civil society, whether it's the media, whether it's ordinary people on the street talking to their member of parliament, whether it's the parliamentarians themselves mm-hmm. giving their voice to what they want, which is peace in this country, and encouraging the leadership of this country to take the right step forward and not to take a backward step and to move into further rounds of violence. As you know, the risk is we will have another round of violence if there is not an agreement signed and implemented in Addis. And the second round is so important. So let's keep focused, let's keep positive, mm-hmm. But let's all be quite realistic and put the pressure on all parties mm-hmm. to deliver.